Good morning. It's 8 a.m. You're listening to KVNF, and this is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubenik. Community gardens dole out small plots of land and encourage people with limited access to fresh produce to grow their own. Now there's a new twist on that model springing up across the country: edible food forests. Imagine turning a public park into a free-for-all of community plants and snacks. KUNC and Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon reports on a new food forest planting its roots in a tiny Colorado mountain town.
Stephanie Sison walks through Ponderosa Park in the town of Basalt. She holds in her hands a planning map for the half-acre plot.
So the entrance will be over there.
Circles on the map show where plum, apple, and nectarine trees will be planted. A plot for mushrooms is adjacent, and a seed-saving garden sprawls at the forest entrance.
The central area being the tree section, which will be cleared a bit in the understory and left to natives, so all native edibles will be added in as the understory.
All the amenities sound like they could be part of a community garden, but this is different. The concept is pretty simple. Planners recreate a forest ecosystem with edible plants and trees in a public space. Then you open it up and allow people to forage for food for free.
It is a forest. It is a park, but it's all edible. So the whole community can come in and sit under the apple tree and eat from the apple tree.
Or, Sison says, pick mushrooms or tomatoes or walnuts. Compare that to a community garden, which gives growers the mindset of personal ownership.
My row, my tomatoes, you know, I tend it, I take care of it, I harvest it, I take it home. This is just everyone's.
Sison's employer, the Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute, is partnering with the town of Basalt to pay for and maintain the food forest. Basalt serves as a small bedroom community for the affluent ski resort in nearby Aspen. The town's horticulturalist, Lisa DiNardo, says she hopes the food forest can serve as common ground within the community.
And this is where we need to go. This is one way to build bridges in communities. It's through a food network, for a healthy food network.
That robust network plays into the food forest's location, within walking distance to the town's elementary, middle, and high schools, and across the street from a predominantly Latino trailer park community. DiNardo says up in the mountains, food security is a huge issue, and that has people thinking about what they eat. A couple years ago, a blizzard and subsequent avalanches cut off road travel. Produce trucks couldn't make it into the isolated mountain towns.
There was a big storm, went into City Market, and literally the shelves were empty. And I think that was an impetus for people, growers, to really start thinking about it. You know, what can we do locally to bridge the gap?
The forest represents a shift in the way towns and cities think about their public spaces, but it's still an experiment.
Trees take a long time to establish and get both looking nice and producing food.
Don Thilmany studies local food system economics at Colorado State University.
So I think that's why they're taking a different tact and not having individual owners, but seeing it truly as a community asset to share, similar to a park system or a trail system or streets and roads.
Thilmany says she can't help but be cynical about the idea of opening up the forest completely. What happens when someone picks all the apples at once, or teens trample all the tomato plants?
I do think there will be some challenges from people who wonder, how much of that fruit crop do I own?
So I'll be fenced, the whole thing.
The forest's main proponent, Stephanie Sison, says she's not worried about the park being overrun by ambitious harvesters. Sure, the park will be open 24/7, but Basalt is a small town, and people in small towns talk.
The more open we are, we can kind of combat the one or two people that might have some malicious intent. It just won't be cool. And if it's not cool, they probably won't do it. So it'll be cool to come here and eat.
Plus, Sison says, the trees won't be bearing fruit for a couple years. Plenty of time to educate scofflaws about how this food forest actually works. I'm Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media reports on farm and food issues around the country. You can find more at harvestpublicmedia.org. Candidates for school board seats in counties across western Colorado are gearing up for the races and offering their views on Amendment 66, the proposed income tax increase that would fund public schools throughout the state. As The Watch reports, three of four Ouray County school board candidates at a forum last week said they're concerned about the amendment's impacts on the Ouray School District. The three all said if passed, the measure could lead to less money for per-student funding. The candidates also claimed the measure would take Ouray taxpayers' money away from their own school district to fund larger, lower-achieving urban districts. One of the candidates is incumbent Don Mort. According to The Watch, Mort reminded the forum that the Ouray School Board's official position neither supports nor opposes the measure. Candidate Jane Ross, meanwhile, said she supports the amendment, saying the bigger picture of what the bill is trying to achieve is more important and that any flaws in the bill would work themselves out over time. In Delta County, current school board member Cheryl Hines and board candidate Ron German have expressed their opposition to Amendment 66. Hines told the Delta County Independent that while she supports the reforms in the measure, she doesn't think there's a solid enough guarantee that the new tax revenue would be used strictly for education funding if the state sees a budget shortfall down the road. German said he has, quote, mixed feelings about the measure's wording, while board member Kathy Sevenson said she likes that funding would be based on average daily enrollment throughout the year, but she's not sure if the $5 million computer system to track enrollment is a good idea. School board candidate Mike Mason said he's opposed to the tax increases, while his opponent Tammy Smith said she remains neutral. According to the Independent, incumbent board member Jan Tuen has his reservations as well, saying while he agrees the county needs more education funding, the income-based formula for the tax increase could be seen as unfair. Amendment 66 would raise taxes through a two-tiered income-based system, but wouldn't affect sales, corporate, or property taxes. U.S. Marshals are looking for a Telluride man suspected of attempted murder and aggravated assault and misconduct involving weapons. According to the Telluride Daily Planet, an arrest warrant for 25-year-old Robert Angel Berrigan was issued on October 3rd in Maricopa County, Arizona. Authorities with the Telluride Marshals Department looked for Berrigan at a Shandoka apartment last Thursday, but didn't find him there. Berrigan, who might go by the alias of Cerna, was arrested in Telluride last year after a fight at the Sheridan Bar. He was sentenced to 2 years of probation and 24 hours for that incident. Authorities are asking anyone with information about his whereabouts to call 252-4010. U.S. Senate leaders announced yesterday afternoon they had reached a deal to avert a default on the federal government's debt and to reopen the government after being shut down for more than 14 days. The U.S. House passed the bill late last night, and President Obama signed it into law just after midnight. Yesterday, KVNF's Sin Holder asked people in the North Fork Valley what they thought of the government shutdown and the political gridlock that's perpetuated it.
I'm with KVNF Community Radio. I'm asking people how they feel about the government shutdown.
I think they all need to be fired from top to bottom. Start over. Organizations that they're trying to legislate for, like, let's say, schools, why don't they ask teachers what needs to be done with the job that they're working with? And there's too much money. They have their hands in too many cookie jars. Too much money. And maybe that kind of money corrupts people. I don't know.
What would you like to see happen?
Well, I'm held completely accountable for all the money I spend. Why can't they be?
Do you know anybody that's been personally affected by the shutdown?
Yes, a very good friend of mine is a hairdresser in Arizona, and she counts on people coming through to see the Grand Canyon for her livelihood to do their hair and make them pretty, and there's nobody there.
It's all crap, in my opinion. Maybe the shutdown's what we needed. I think they spend too much money anyway, so they need to cut back. The shutdown creates that. Well, I'm all about it.
Well, one of the things that seems really irritating is that Colorado has to pay to keep our national park open. So that's a little bit frustrating.
It's a bad deal all the way around. I mean, there's absolutely no reason why it should be going on. So,
are you a Democrat or a Republican?
Neither. Yeah, I don't pick sides. I try and go for the best player regardless which team they're on.
What would you like to see happen?
I'd like to see them all get fired and we start over, personally, but that's not up to me. There are a bunch of children that are going to sit there and squabble against each other. I know several people that are personally affected by the shutdown. I have some friends that work in a couple national parks, and they're sitting at home twiddling their thumbs, wondering when they get to go back to work.
I think it was unnecessary. I think it's ridiculous, but the solving of it today is worse than the problem.
Yeah, I think it's a bunch of crap is what I think. I think it's unnecessary, and I don't think they should be drawing a paycheck for something they're not doing. But what are you going to do about it?
It's all uncalled for. They're all our politicians anymore are just a bunch of liars and thieves, and that's all they are. They're only in it for the money, our money. So that's about it. But yeah, what are we going to do? We deserve everything we get until we change our government policies. Get them out. But it doesn't matter what, you know, they're all fighting, one side's fighting the other side. Instead of trying to fix things and work together, everybody is split. You know, our side's better. Our side's better. Nah, it's all BS.
Well, I think if they're shutting down, I think they should forfeit their wage. I'm waiting for it to actually affect us because my husband's on Social Security disability. And that's how most of the people around here, you know, there's a lot of disabled people and a lot of people on Social Security. And if that's going to start affecting them, could wind up being a revolution.
That was KVNF Sin Holder talking to people in the North Fork Valley about their views on the federal government shutdown. The government is reopened as of this morning. Today we're bringing you the first in a series called Around the World in 3 Minutes, featuring commentaries from Ariana and Eliana Sorensen, students at the North Fork Valley Vision School. For this series, these two students will be focusing on world issues and human rights. Today's commentary is from Ariana and is entitled The Secrets of the National Security Agency.
Breaking news! Leaks from Edward Snowden tell a disturbing story of a national security agency, NSA. The NSA has been recording millions of Americans' telephone conversation over a period of years. Many Americans had never heard of the NSA before the Snowden leaks. However, the NSA has existed for years. According to the NSA's website, their mission is to lead the U.S. government in order to gain an advantage for the nation and our allies under all circumstances. Edward Snowden revealed that the NSA spied on 38 countries in all, even including Canada, one of our closest neighbors and allies. If you found out that your best friend had planted listening devices in your room, how would you feel? Would you be mad? Although this example is extremely simplistic, the same concept applies to the NSA spying. Our allies have every right to be angry with the United States. We are showing our distrust in those who support us and sending a clear message that the U.S. is now a lone power. Some would say that it is a good idea to keep an eye on our allies, thus justifying the NSA's actions. However, the controversial methods do not end with spying on our allies. They also spied on the American people by using Verizon Wireless's network. According to figures from Verizon Wireless's network, the NSA spied on 91% of the American population. According to the Pew Research Center, 56% of Americans support the monitoring of American phone records. To make matters worse, 45% support the monitoring of Americans' emails. We are given privacy by the Fourth Amendment, yet we seem to believe that spying is fine, as long as it is done to counteract terrorism. We have a right to privacy. Are we willing to let it disappear? Privacy is the right to have conversations about world politics, global issues, home politics, and economics without the fear of retaliation. The NSA has breached this right. It will continue to do so unless American voters say no, changing our free democracy into a place like Russia and China, where citizens are spied on every day. More often than not, citizens who speak out are arrested to be jailed and fined. Our country is built on privacy, and it is our right and responsibility to protect it.
That was a commentary from North Fork Valley Vision School student Ariana Sorensen as a part of the series Around the World in 3 Minutes. Thanks for listening. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.